All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we now address the next section here of Genesis chapter 25, verses 19 through 26, which begins the generations of Isaac. It begins verse 19 here, and that generational record will end chapter 35, verse 29. It begins here with the birth of the twins of Isaac, none other than Esau and Jacob. All right, with verses 19, 20 through 26, we'll do as a unit here. Now, these are, again, the New American Standard records. Literally, simply the generations of Isaac. Abraham's son, Abraham became the father of Isaac. You have the wow conjunction, our adjective demonstrative here, both plural word for these is Ella in the Hebrew, E-L-L-E-H. Thought I saw it come on once. Helps when it's plugged in. Alright, these, Ella in the Hebrew, and then we have our word for generations again as a common feminine plural construct, Toledoth, T-O-L-E D-O-T-H. These are the generations of, that being Isaac, proper noun transliterated. Abraham's son is literally the son of Abraham. He had the common masculine singular noun construct. A word for son is Ben, B-E-N. Abraham, transliterated. And then, it seems a little redundant here, Abraham became the father of Isaac. I just more or less said that in other words, but anyway. Became the father of, you have Abraham repeated. Then you have the verb to become the father of, begat, as it might be in Old English, the Hifil, perfect, third masculine singer, Yalad, or Yalad, Y-A-L-A-D, assigned a direct object, then Isaac, his name. Verse 20, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. Short historical background here. Of Rebekah, while consecutive, our verb to become is the Cal and perfect third masculine singular Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. Isaac, the son of 40 years, literally, 40 years old. Again, our common masculine singular noun construct, Ben, son of, in the construct, followed with our adjective, both plural, absolute. Number 40 is Arabaim, Arabaim, A-R-E-B-B-A-I-Y-N, Arabaim. Years is our common feminine singular absolute noun, Shana, S-H-A-N-A-H. When he took Rebekah, you have the preposition bet, followed with the cal infinitive construct with the third masculine singular suffix lakak, to take, L-A-Q-A-C-H. The taking of Rebekah, sign of direct object, then Rebekah, denoting the object of his taking. Here, the daughter of Bethuel, Our noun for daughter is common feminine singular construct, bath, in the Hebrew, B-A-T-H. Bethuel, transliterated, here known as an Aramaean, denoting his race, his racial identity. Definite article, then the proper noun, Aramaean, A-R-E-A-M-M-I-Y. Then you have where they're from, preposition men, and the proper noun, Padan Aram, transliterated. She also being the sister of Laban. We've been introduced to these people already. Our noun for sister, common feminine singular construct, Akoth, A-C-H-O-T-H. Laban, transliterated. He also is an Aramean, like father, like son, I guess. Definite article, proper noun. For a wife or to be his wife, you have the preposition lamed with the third masculine singular suffix, plus the preposition lamed repeated. Then our noun for wife in the Hebrew, common feminine singular absolute, ishashah, I-S-H-S-H-A-H. To him for a wife, literally. And verse 21, and Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Seems like this may run in the family. Well, consecutive. And then our verb to pray here is the cal imperfect third masculine singular, athar, A-T-H-A-R. Here, obviously, intercessory on behalf of someone else. He entreated or prayed to, that being Isaac doing the praying, to the Lord, preposition lamed, then our proper noun, Yahweh, Y-A-H-W-E-H, translated Lord, on behalf of his wife, yet the preposition lamed, followed with the preposition nokach, N-O-C-A-C-H. Wife, again, is ishashah, the common feminine singular construct with the third masculine singular suffix. Why is because is a conjunction key, K-I-Y. Followed with the word barren, infertile. Adjective feminine singular absolute, akar, A-Q-A-R. She couldn't have children. She didn't have children. Then you have the pronoun he, which is she in the Hebrew, third feminine singular, as in the predicate position here, was she, H-I-Y. And the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Well, consecutive. Then we have the same verb used for praying, here in the Niphal, imperfect third masculine singular, Athar, A-T-H-A-R. Here the idea is Yahweh appeased him to entreat, then on behalf in the passive is to appease, hence answered, entreated for him, responded in a positive way. For him is a preposition lama with third masculine singular suffix. That being Yahweh, proper noun, and she conceived Rebekah his wife, literally in the Hebrew, while consecutive, our verb to conceive here, she got pregnant, cal imperfect third feminine singular verb hara, H-A-R-A-H, Rebekah, proper noun, his wife, ishashah, again, feminine singular construct, common with the third masculine singular suffix, his wife. So, a blessing then turns into a test for Rebekah, especially. Verse 22, but the children struggled together within her. So, obviously, we see now that she conceived but with more than one child. You have the consecutive follow with our verb that's translated struggled here is the hithpael, which is reflexive, intensive, imperfect third masculine plural, ratsats, ratsats. Literally means to crush or oppress. So it wasn't just a handshake or a kick in the rear from one fetus to the other. They were definitely going after it. Aggressively. But they themselves struggled. And now we see that they're of the male gender, definite article, common masculine plural absolute, translated children, is literally sons. At least one of them is. In the Hebrew, you always put the male gender out if there is one male in the midst of even a million females. The women livers love that kind of stuff. Ben, B-E-N. Within her, you have the preposition bet, N, E-E-N, B-E-T, excuse me. And then you have the common masculine singular noun construct with the third feminine singular suffix, the word kerev, Q-E-R-E-B, in her midst, hence her womb. Denotes the location of their existence and struggle, the womb. And she said, as she contemplates what's going on here, if it is so, why then am I like this or this way? And she said, while consecutive, our verb to say, Calum perfect, third feminine singular, Amar, M-A-M-A-R. If it is so, you have the conjunction M, I-M, plus the adverb ken, K-E-N. Literally, if thus, hence, if it is so. Then you had an interrogative particle, lama, L-A-M-M-A-H, why, with the question mark. Then followed with the adjective, masculine singular, zeh, Z-E-H, this, or such. And then simply the pronoun, first common singular pronoun, anoki, why, thus, or such, am I. Literally in the Hebrew, A-N-O-K-I-Y. So she went to inquire of the Lord. Well, there's a novel idea. Got an issue in front of you. Why don't you pray about it? Instead of running off all jangled up in regards to your emotions and thinking otherwise. She turned to God in prayer. Wow, consecutive. Our verb to go or went is a cow and perfect third feminine singer, halak, H-A-L-A-K. It literally means walk. Where exactly she went to converse, I do not know. It doesn't tell us. She went to inquire is a preposition lamed with the cow infinity verb construct darash, D-A-R-A-S-H, to inquire or to seek carefully. Sign of direct object, Yahweh, proper noun, Lord. Verse 23. And the Lord answered her, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two people shall be separated from your body. And he said to her, Yahweh, wow, consecutive, again our verb, Amar, A-M-A-R, cow, perfect third masculine singer, Yahweh, to her is a preposition lama with the third feminine singer suffix. Two is your adjective masculine dual construct, Shanaim, S-H-E-N-A-Y-I-M. Two, nations, our typical word for nations here, common masculine plural absolute noun, Goy, G-O-I-Y. In your womb, translated in your womb, you have the preposition bet, followed now with the common feminine singular construct with the second feminine singular suffix beten, B-E-T-E-N. Earlier it was in her midst, Kareb, now in her batin, her womb. And two people shall be separated from your body. A vowel conjunction. Two again shall naim, repeated, S-H-E-N-A-Y-I-M. Then our word translated peoples here is the common masculine plural absolute leon, L-E-O-M. Peoples, races, if you will. We'll deal with that in our notes. From your body, literally, is a preposition men, from, M-I-N. Then you have the common masculine plural construct as the second feminine singular suffix, me'e, M-E-E-H. Literally, it's the inward parts, refers to one's organs. So we see these different words that are all describing, if you will, her womb, the location of the fetus where the struggle is going on. And then following, you finally have the verb nifal, imperfect third masculine plural, our verb to separate or divide, farad, from to be separated from her body, your body, P-H-A-R-A-D. Verse 24, or wait, still some more in 23b. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. The response here in the Hebrew text is poetic, in poetic verse. And one people, you have vowel conjunction in our noun for people again, common masculine singular absolute, leom, L-E-O-M. Then you have the preposition men and leom repeated, and people from people, literally. People from a people. Will be stronger. Will be strong is the cal imperfect third masculine singer, amets, A-M-E-T-S. And the older shall serve the younger, vowel conjunction, in our word for older is the adjective masculine singular absolute, the older one, Rav, R-A-B, literally means chief or leader, hence first in line, older. Follow with the cal imperfect third masculine singular, our verb to serve, avad, A-B-A-B. The younger, younger is adjective masculine singular absolute, tasayir. T-S-A-I-Y-R. Verse 24, when her days to be delivered, fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. So now we know exactly how many, two, in the conception, while consecutive. Then our, first you have the verb to fulfill, is the cal imperfect third masculine singular, maleh. M-A-L-E-H, obviously she came to term. Her days is the common masculine plural construction, a construct with the third feminine singular suffix, yom, our word for days, Y-O-M, to give birth or to deliver. Preposition lamed with the cal infinitive construct, the purpose of the days for delivery, yalad, Y-A-L-A-D. Vowel conjunction, then you have the interjectory particle, our word behold, henna, H-I-N-N-E-H. Behold, twins is the common masculine plural absolute noun, tewomim, tewomim, T-E-W-O-M-I-Y-M. Inner womb. Now we have the preposition bet with our word for womb used earlier. Common feminine singular struct here. Third feminine singular suffix, beten, beten, B-E-T-E-N. 25, now the first, the one that shoots out of the canal first of the birth, came forth red, all over like a hairy garment. And they named him Esau. You have the vowel consecutive. then the verb to come out, the cal and perfect verb masculine singular, you got saw, y-a-t-s-a, he came out, definite article, followed with the adjective masculine singular, absolute, our word for first, the first one, rishon, r-i-s-h-o-n, red or ruddy is the adjective masculine singular absolute, adamoni, a-d-e-m-o-n-i-y. All of him, common masculine singular construct, it wasn't just his face or a part of his body that had the color. You have common masculine singular construct, third masculine singular suffix, kol, all of, K-O-L, him, like a hairy garment. You have the preposition kaf, simply that in the Hebrew. A cloak of, garment, common masculine singular construct, adaroth, A-D-D-E-R-E-T-H, like a cloak of or garment of, and then our word for hair is sa'ar, common masculine singular absolute, S-E-A-R, S-E-A-R. And they called, while consecutive, followed with a cal and perfect third masculine plural, our verb to call, kara, Q-A-R-A. His name is a noun, common masculine singular construct, with the third masculine singular suffix shem, S-H-E-M. Then our word Esau, transliterated, Esau, E-S-A-W. Verse 26, and afterward his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Well, conjunction, our word afterward is the adverb acheray, A-C-H-E-R-E-Y. After thus, literally, adverb kin, followed with kin, the adverb. He came out, again our verb yatsah, Y-A-T-S-A, cal perfect third masculine singular. His brother, so two males, common masculine singular, construct third masculine singular, suffix or noun brothers is ach, A-C-H. And his hand, this might have been a sight to see. While conjunction, our word for hand is a common feminine singular noun, construct with third masculine singular suffix. The brother's hand, yad, y-a-d, holding on to is a cal participle, feminine singular absolute, akez, a-c-h-e-z, meaning to grasping or seizing, hence holding on to. And what he had grasp of was Esau's heel. Here, you have the preposition bet, on, and then our noun for heel, common masculine singular construct, akev, A-Q-E-B, of Esau, proper noun transliterated. And they called his name, same construct, while consecutive, our verb kara, cal and perfect third masculine singular, followed with our noun shem, name, with the third masculine singular suffix, Yaakov, Jacob. Y-A-A-C-O-B. B. And Isaac was 60 years old when she, being Rebecca, gave birth to them. While consecutive, proper noun, Isaac, son of 60 years, literally, Ben, common maximum singular construct, then our follow with our adjective for 60, both plural absolute, shishishim, S-H-I-S-H-S-H-S-H-I-Y-N. Shishashim. Year, Shana. Shishashim, Shana. Common feminine singer, absolute noun. S-H-A-N-A-H. Follow with the preposition bet and the cow infinitive construct to give birth. Yalad. Y-A-L-A-D. Sign a direct object. Follow with the sign direct object here with the third masculine plural suffix eth to them, eth. All right. Rereading verses 19 through 26. Now these are the generations of Isaac. Abraham, the son of Abraham. Abraham became the father of Isaac. Verse 20, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. Verse 21, and Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. And the Lord entreated him, or appeased him, answered him. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Verse 22, but the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it is so, why then am I this way? So she went to inquire or seek with care of Yahweh, of the Lord. Verse 23, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, the ten, and two people shall be separated from your body, Ne'eh. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. Verse 24, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her beten, her womb. Verse 25, now the first came forth red all over like a hairy cloak or garment, and they named him Esau. And verse 26, and afterward his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. Analysis of verses 19 through 26. 1. Another section break in Genesis now is indicated with the noun generations, our word toledah. 2. See Genesis 2, 4, 5, 1, 6, 9, 10, 1 for verse 32. Also, chapter 11, verses 10 and 27, 25, 12 through 13 for like formula. Remember back, all the way back in the introduction, we brought this out, that Genesis is broken up in sections based on generations or beginnings. So all those areas that we've seen already so far has been a proper section break to address a new subject, if you will, where the term generations is used. We just saw the one with Ishmael and his generation. 12 and 13. So 3, the generations here of Isaac begin with verse 19 in our verses and ends Genesis all the way 35, chapter 35, verse 29. So the next 10 chapters, plus a little bit, deals with the generations of Isaac. 4, now the final genealogical breaks in Genesis will be concerning Esau, in Genesis 36, 1, then verse 9, where the generations parenthetically sets him apart, if you will. And then Jacob in chapter 37, verse 2. We'll see when we get there. The last two, in other words, generations of Isaac. Then we'll deal with the generations of Esau, and then the generations of Jacob as the conclusion to bring it to conclusion, the book of Genesis. Genesis 36, 1, records of the generations of Esau, that is Edom, and then in reference to his generations, it closes verse 9, these are the generations of Esau, feather Edomites in the hill country of Seir. Basically, the generations looks at Esau, where he was habitating with his brother Jacob and them in their general area. Then he moves off by himself in the area of Edom, if you will, apart from Jacob. Then chapter 37:2 brings in Jacob, and we'll see his clan in that regard. So 5, now the term generations here, again in the plural, concerning Isaac, means himself and offspring, introduced in our verses, that being the twin brothers Esau and Jacob. So generations of verb in view are three generations specifically, Isaac, Esau, and Jacob. And there, Esau and Jacob are broken down in their own separate generations after the fact. So 6, these are the only two children of Isaac recorded in the scripture, though some conjecture otherwise. There's some speculation that Isaac had daughters, etc., but we have no record of that in the Bible otherwise. So, in contrast, if you will, to Abraham, who had not only Ishmael, but then the sons of his other concubine, his third wife, and then Jacob, who produces another 12 kids. Isaac only had 2. So 7, now these three generations are here grouped together as their lives parallel one another in the text. Throughout the text, it's apropos that they're seen as a unit here because their lives throughout the text intertwine with one another, parallel one another in the narratives. So 8, that Isaac lived to be 180 years old. Outlived his dad by 5 years. It's because he was a non-smoker. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, I had to say that. That Isaac lived to be 180 years old. That's recorded for us in Genesis 35, verse 28. And the twins were born when he was 60, here in our verses, verse 26, 25. That means he lived 120 years alongside his sons. Jacob, we know, lived 147 years. Esau, we're not given a date of his death, a number of years he lived. But we do know he was alive at Isaac's death because he, with Jacob, was there for the funeral, if you will. That's 35:29 brings that out. So however long he lived, we know that Isaac lived 120 years in spite of being 60 before he had these two boys. So 9, now during the period of Isaac's history here in the narrative up to chapter 35. During this period of Isaac's history, Isaac, he fades into the background after chapter 27. And is only remotely mentioned after that. And Jacob assumes center stage from 28, 5 and following there, looking ahead to get a feel for the context. Then Isaac sent Jacob away and he went to Padan Aram to Laban. And then the story basically just centers on Jacob after the fact, even though Isaac's still remotely mentioned in the chapters following. So during the period of Isaac's history, point 9 again, he fades into the background after chapter 27, and Jacob assumes center stage in spite of this section being emphasized in Isaac's generations otherwise. So what does this mean? 10, therefore the term generations in verse 19, our verse, highlights the generations in heir to the line of Christ in contrast to others, i.e. through Esau. So that Isaac, but that Jacob takes center stage during this section. And Esau is withheld, basically. The emphasis the reader is focused on is the continuing line of Messiah, the covenant heir in this respect. 11, now this is further suggested, and we don't just draw our conclusion based on that one point. This is further suggested, point 11, in the redundant emphasis concerning Isaac being, quote, Abraham's son. And then goes on to say, Abraham became the father of Isaac, ben Abraham, Abraham, Yalad, Yishak. Yishak. So 12, the double emphasis on Abraham reminds the reader of the miraculous circumstances surrounding Isaac's birth to perpetuate the line of Messiah. The son of Abraham. Abraham became the father. Well, how did that happen? Through a miracle. That's how Isaac came into existence, where Yahweh had to reverse the sexual death of both Isaac's father and mother, both Abraham and Sarah, for him to be born. So the double emphasis on Abraham being his son and Abraham being his father otherwise reminds the reader of these circumstances. So 13, the miracle birth reflects upon God ensuring the covenant promise of heir, recalling his omnipotence there, reversing sexual death as God flexed his power. And he took two adults who could not have children. They were sexually dead, impotent, and barren both on behalf of the father and mother. And he changed their health. He changed their status sexually. And Sarah became fertile, and Abraham was able to reproduce again in regards to his seed. Now, in that situation, as we remember, Sarah was barren during the whole period. Now, being barren simply means she didn't have any kids. Whether or not she was actually sexually dead, that it was completely impossible otherwise, that's not stated. But we do know that eventually she reached an age of sexual death, beyond childbearing age for women of her time. And how women would know that is through their stopping of menstrual cycle, etc. But anyway, so God rejuvenated their sexual capabilities, and Abraham, who had become sexually dead just through aging, depletion of his sexual health, if you will, in that regards, God reversed that. And hence, a miracle occurred. And Isaac was born, and Abraham became his father, just as God promised he would. So 14, this addressed the physical concerns of producing an heir. God took care of physical circumstances of the situation at hand so that the promised heir could be born according to the divine design. 15, yet this was only part of the equation in regards to producing an heir, as God further needed, point 15 continuing, to ensure that positive volition was in place to spiritually represent the line of Christ. It wasn't going to do for God to let just any Tom, Dick, and Harry become an heir to the line of Christ. He also need to ensure in his plan that positive volition would be in place in regards to this miracle child, that physically he interceded on behalf of Abraham and Sarah for them to have. 16, God does so. Now, how does he bring this about? God does so per his attribute of foreknowledge. That is, obviously, a subcategory of his omniscience. God is all-knowing. He knows all things. He's not learning things. He doesn't have to sit in Bible class and learn about the Bible. He's the author. But he knows all things. There is no contingency that he doesn't know. He always has. His foreknowledge is that omniscience looking forward in the future and able to perfectly see what will occur in the economy of his plan, otherwise, as for us, all the intents and purposes, for his creation and the angels in this regard. So he exercises his omniscience, whereas before he exercised his omnipotence, his power, and also implements the doctrine of election. The doctrine of election is that aspect of God with his ability to foresee who's going to be positive and who's going to be negative, of choosing those who he knows will be positive to be benefactors of his plan. We have the doctrine of election and calling. Election occurs in eternity past. God did this before we were in a thought in our daddy's mind, in that sense. He did it before the creation of the world. He had all this figured out. And so he not only had to intercede physically on behalf of them, but he had to assure that the soul, which does not get put into the body until birth, indeed, he saw that it was going to be positive to doctrine, to carry on the tradition of the covenant and be a representative of it. Now, the confusion lies in regards to, often, his foreknowledge. That somehow his foreknowledge is causative, that somehow he makes people believe or not to believe. That's the Calvinist approach. That is erroneous. Simply, foreknowledge is the ability to know. To know something doesn't cause something to happen. I know it's cold out there, but you can't blame me for it. Or maybe you can. I don't know. Maybe God's after me. I don't know. I'm cursing by association. But I didn't cause the cold weather to happen, see. But I know. I mean, if I knew what the lottery numbers were, we'd all be sitting on a yacht having Bible class right now. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe on Lake Erie, but who would want to do that? But anyway. So, foreknowledge is not causative. His sovereignty to choose, that's causative. His omnipotence is causative. So, election is his right to choose based on what he knows in regards to the individuals at hand. And we know that he chose both Abraham and Isaac to fulfill the roles of being the recipient and the inaugurator of the covenant itself, Abraham, and then Isaac to be the promised son. So this doctrine has to come into play for God to fulfill his plan appropriately. Nehemiah 9:7. So his election occurred in eternity past. Calling occurs in time. Those who he knows foreknew that he chose to be recipients, he ensures that they will get a gospel message before they exit this world. Or any other doctrine they need to satisfy their positive volition. But understand, all this comes about because of the free will, the choice of the individual, simply that he knew they would make. So there's a major difference between Calvinism and free will. Calvinism says God's cause of evil then. If he causes people to believe or not to believe, then he's an author of evil. No, he's not. That's just about as blasphemous as you can be. See, the people bring the cause about upon themselves through their own free choice. But anyway, Nehemiah 9:7, you are the Lord God who chose Abram. That looks, identifies Abraham in his premature name. Abram. And that looks at the salvation adjustment in which God elected him, chose him. Choosing and election are synonymous. As a believer, to be then the recipient, and brought him out from Ur of the Chaldees. See, that shows pre-travel days when Abraham made salvation adjustment to the justice of God. and gave him the name Abraham, then that reflects upon his continued positive volition and growing up spiritually, making the maturity adjustment which his name represents. So Nehemiah brings in the doctrine of election in God's hand in regards to the covenant recipients in this respect. Then confer Genesis 17:19. We're in the section where Abraham tried to substitute Ishmael that we dealt with earlier as the heir, and Yahweh makes it very clear. God said, verse 19, "Know that Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him." It doesn't use the word chose specifically, but it's overtly evident that that is exactly what he's doing. He is choosing Isaac. See, "My covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him." To be apropos further down the line in the same process. So both Abraham and Isaac were chosen by God. So you have this physical intercession by God on behalf of the covenant that was emphasized in Abraham's birth of Isaac. Now we change course a little bit, and it brings in the other aspect in regards to maintaining the fidelity of the covenant heirs, and that is for God to ensure that positive volition is also in place in regards to being an heir. So 17, "God chose and proclaimed the heirs of the covenant based on what he knew they would be in their souls." That is positive volition. Through his foreknowledge. 18 is election of positive volition that now underwrites the circumstances involving the birth of the twins, separating the two generations of these twins from negative and positive volition. To know this and understand this in regards to God's foreknowledge, and that he has this ability, even before the soul is created and placed into the body of the newborn, he knows who will be positive and negative from eternity past. He always has known. Answers verses that we will deal with that coincide in regards to this birth, and the fact that even before they were born, while they were in their mother's wombs, God hated Esau and he loved Jacob. Well, people out there that obviously are fallacious in regards to the process of birth to begin with and the imparting of the soul into the body, they love to take this, the fetus has a soul. The soul comes at conception. No, it doesn't. It just shows and reflects upon the fact that God, you're not going to catch him asleep. He's so far ahead of mankind in regards to his thinking, his understanding and knowledge, it's not even funny. Where it is, if you enjoy these kinds of things, see, in regards to God, that he knows all things. And therefore, this gives him the capability to ensure that every aspect of his plan is going to be fulfilled to a T. Nothing is going to fail along the way. He already knows. He's already prepared. See. Now, obviously, his sovereignty, his choice of choosing them to be the recipients, that's his business. See, look, their position in this plan, as it is with each and every one of us. We don't know, we don't have any say what our spiritual gifts are. God chooses that. You know, like what your spiritual gift is, take it up with God. He gave it to you. See? And things of this nature. And so, we have here a completion, if you will, in this birth, of something that is underwriting the previous birth of Isaac by Abraham. Now being seen in regards to the birth of Isaac's sons, Jacob and Esau, of God's foreknowledge also involved in the producing of the heirs of the covenants and ensuring that everything goes according to plan. So 19, it teaches that God's insight of omniscience from eternity past precedes physical realities enabling perfect fulfillment of this plan. Whatever test you come across, you're facing today, understand God knew an eternity past is going to happen. He knew who was going to be positive. He knew who was going to be negative. And everything is prepared in regards to his control of history, circumstances, situations to facilitate the choices that he knows everybody's going to make otherwise in that regard, or the situations at hand that we may be facing in our testing. So when you go into a test, you can take with you the confidence, God knows. He already knows. Now. And therefore, look to God, the fact that He has a plan set up specifically in regards to the individual, whether they're negative or positive, that will be fulfilled on their part. And this is all part of the orchestrating of the complete picture of God's plan for mankind. Phenomenal. Just phenomenal, man. Give me a computer like this. Especially with that kind of speed. Oh, that'd be nice. Get rid of the old cable service. But anyway. So, That's just an additional insight to take in to our section now to give you a complete picture in regards to the doctrine at hand that is taught in these verses that generally interpreters, commentators miss completely. Only the astute who are really digging in and digging for that gold will pull these gems out and see the completed picture in regards to what's going on. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us to these things in Jesus' name. Amen.